I want to open this up for discussion. Anybody want to comment?
I think that we all have a little bit of that in us, Paul. You know, that avoidance of success. And I think you've outlined the reasons very well.
I appreciate that. I'll ask yourself, by the way, here's another thing you could do. Look at your life so far and ask yourself, how many times have I had a realistic opportunity for success? It was laid out in front of me, and how many times did I screw it up? And what I'm going to postulate here is a self-sabotage. You self-sabotage your success.
No, I think a lot of us could tell that story.
And why did that happen to you? When it came to the point where it was like a tipping point where if you put in that extra effort, you could have like a 10-to-1 payout, most people stop just before. It's like an exponential curve. This is one other thing I need to add to this. An exponential curve is a curve that gradually increases. It looks like it'll never go up, and all of a sudden it goes straight up. What will happen when you break past your comfort curve, your comfort zone, is that your success will go exponential. So it's not a matter of getting twice as much if you go a little bit further. You usually get 10 times as much if you go a little bit further. If you closed a little bit harder, quote-unquote, when it was a little bit more, with more energy, with more theatrical input and emotion, more involved, more just making the sale happen, which by definition is what a closer is, someone who makes sales happen, you won't just double your sales, you'll probably get 10 times as many sales. And why would someone do that? Because they have a specific reason why they need to do that. They have to have that success. At the moment of truth, most people knowing that they don't have to have the success, they stop. Just short of the energy needed to close that deal. And as with pole vaulting, you could set the bar at 18 foot 6 inches. What do you get if you jump 18 foot 5 inches? You get nothing. And yet there's a huge amount of effort and energy, long months of practice to be able to jump 18 feet 5 inches on a pole vault. That's not easy to do. But that last inch would have got you the gold. You would have been famous. You would have been in the Wheaties box making the big money. In other words, the payoff would have been exponential if you were worked a little bit harder. But the one person either didn't have it or just didn't have it inside to push a little bit harder than the other person did. Just a little bit harder. You'll see it in a boxing match. Both trained fighters, both immensely physically fit. One guy wants it a little bit more. They call it like the eye of the tiger. One guy just wants it more. He will find a way. He will take that last punch and then deliver one more on his own and then win. It's exponential. Here's the technique. You have to define exactly what you want and why and make that goal life or death for you. That's it. It's life or death. You are going to do that goal or die, especially as far as your subconscious mind is concerned. Then you're going to be willing to pay any price to get what you want. You're not going to hedge. You're not going to put a time limit on 8-10 hours. You're going to work whatever it takes to do that goal. You're going to master it. And then what will happen is you'll push out of the comfort zone and your rewards will come exponentially. And as I said during the last talk on commitment, the magic is at the extremes. When you make that commitment and it's 100%, you're willing to pay any price, then all of a sudden, all the barriers break down. And your success rises exponentially. And that's why it's seemingly impossible to duplicate the success that others had. And yet all they did is push a little bit harder, but then got 50 times more results because it was an exponential curve. Are you guys catching on to what I'm saying here?
Yeah.
Working twice as hard doesn't give you twice the results. Working twice as hard, if you break through out of the comfort zone, and you're on a commission type of a pay plan where instead of closing 1 out of 20 deals, you close 1 out of 4. That's a 500% increase in your pay. It's only because commission sales and this type of work allows you the opportunity for exponential growth of earnings. Because you control call volume and you control close ratio. Those are two wildly leveraged activities. Most people have to wait 6 months or a year to get a 20 cent an hour raise. That's it. Or they go to college for 4 years and try to go from 30 grand a year to 50. They have no opportunity to do what you can do immediately. Some people in business, doesn't even matter if they want to. It takes a long time to build a business. You have to keep reinvesting in it and hire people. You can't just double everything. But a commission sales job, a lot of them, most of them, you can literally just start cranking out the calls and start closing. And you, if you have that intensity of desire and a meaning why you need to close that deal, then you'll start closing it. If you don't, you won't. So the comfort zone is self-imposed. It's also imposed by your DNA, but you can override your DNA. Look, I might be sitting next to a guy in a bar, and he's pissing me off, and my DNA tells me to go over there and punch him right in the face. Of course, if I do that, I'll go to jail, so I can override my impulses. There's all kinds of impulses we have all the time driving our car. You like to run the car in front of you who keeps dawdling. You like to, you know, get on his bumper and push his ass off the side of the road, right? There's all kinds of aggression or, you know, tell people whatever you want. You can't do these things. You're socially constrained all the time, correct? So you can override your impulses all the time. So why not override the impulse that's holding you back? The difference between what I'm saying right now and other things you might have heard before is I'm using science. It's a genetic basis. I'm using known science. I didn't make this stuff up. These are characteristics and traits we all have. And that's what I was trying to illustrate here. It's not just another, you know, pep rally talk, but firmly rooted in known science. This is all duplicable by anybody. Unless you have a reason to override your programming, you won't. The reason has to be real. And the only way you can implement is to make it as real as possible is to study it, give it detail, visualize it, and infuse it with emotion. You have to feel the sun on your face when you're at the cafe in Paris, or the smile on the young guy's face in the teen shelter who now has a place to stay that night, who has a second chance, right? Or the kid who from a poor family who did really well in high school gets to go to college right now. Or your environmental activist, you're going to save this forest, or whatever the heck whatever you want to do. If you needed money for those reasons, or for reasons for your family or something, specifically you want a house for your kids or whatever it is, that's what you're working for. You don't want the house. You want your family to be happy and to be living in a pleasant environment so their kids can have a nice place to grow up. That's what you want, not a house. A house has no emotional content. Don't visualize house. Visualize happy family. Does that make sense, everybody?
Yep.
Don't visualize the trees still being there 100 years from now. Visualize people thanking their ancestors for their foresight into saving that one grove of forest that was such beautiful right on the coast. And that everybody can now see that, and they'll smile on their face, and their conviction, too, that they're going to make sure that forest stays there for their children. You have to go one step beyond the obvious. You don't want to work for money. You don't want to work for the house that the money buys. You want to work for the family who gets to enjoy the house, right? And how good you're going to feel providing in that house. You don't want a teen shelter. You want opportunity for the people and how they're going to be saved in their life, hopefully, and they're going to go on and then help others. So it's kind of like that. You know, I mean, that has weight. That affects your subconscious directly. That will instantly override all your programming. People will die in war because they want to save their family and their country. And they're willing to take a bullet and they're willing to charge up the hill, and they do it all the time. And that, what were they fighting for? They were fighting for their buddies next to them or for their family, but they have hopefully some bigger concern. Otherwise, they're in a bad place because they might not be fighting for nothing but themselves to get the hell out of there. Then they're not going to be, you know, that's why a lot of these guys get screwed up because they had no real reason to be there. So those are the people who get post-traumatic stress disorder more easily than others. I read a really good book by a woman that taught at West Point called Code of Honor about things that soldiers do. And she said, well, basically the sum of that is that they have to understand why they're there. They have to have a firm grasp of the bigger picture. And then those people really come through relatively unscathed. And it's the ones who don't that are real. They'll do stupid things, too. They'll commit atrocities because they have no code of honor, because they have no understanding of the big picture, and they said they weren't training soldiers enough. Anyway, at West Point they get that training, but the rest of the soldiers don't. It's kind of interesting, I thought. That's a great sales book, by the way. Everything she was studying, she was a researcher, everything she learned and that applies to self. Anybody else have a comment or question?
I feel like I'm looking in Paul's greasy mirror right now. How do you overcome that? Straight up, how do you fix that?
Very, very simple is this. You have to have a very clearly defined goal. You have to know why you want something, not just wanting it. You have to understand inside, why do I want the money? What do I think this money is going to do for me? Now, that's a really easy question to ask when you don't have enough money to pay your rent. Then it's an obvious answer. But if you want to get past that comfort zone, that's not the reason anymore. The money has to have some end to it. And for most people, knowing now that fame is fleeting and that being rich doesn't add up to a whole lot, that the bigger values are with family and friends and, you know, other causes, that it doesn't really make any sense to go beyond that. Maybe you don't want any more money. Seriously. For most people don't. So you have to have a bigger goal in mind. You have to have a place for that money to go before you'll get it. It's very simple. That's the vacuum. If you want money in your life, you have to have a place for the money to go. It's like channeling water. What would happen if I ran a river into your house with no outlet? Your house would fill up with water. The water wants to go somewhere. Where is it going to go? If this energy comes in your life, how are you going to channel it? What are you going to do with the money? If it's just for you and your own ego, it's a very shallow goal that won't last. It will not sustain you. Now, there's some people who will push that for a long time, but they're really rarer than you think. They're so ego-driven and so greedy and money-driven, and they're very unhappy typically, and they never have enough. No matter what they got, it's never enough. Okay, and everybody knows what these people are like, and most people have been pretty much forewarned against living like that. They would never do that. They're just not that interested, but some people are just blindly ambitious, and I feel sorry for them. The people I'm thinking about are the people who can make $100 million a year and put that $100 million a year to good use. I like to talk to those people. I want to talk to the person who wants $100 million a year or $10 million a year and has a place for it and has a beautiful vision of what their family's going to get and then how they're going to use that money to help others. Okay? If that was your dream, now it's self-actualization driving you. Now it's your highest purpose. I used to tell my son when he was growing up, he said, well, you know, what do you should do and this and that. I said, look, what your goal in life is to manifest your highest purpose. Not to take the easiest purpose, not just to take the first job that comes along, or just to fall into something and to stay there, but to struggle with the question is, what is your highest purpose in life? And then manifest that reality. And if you fail and you end up with number two, okay, let's say you come to the second best, the second highest goal you could have did, then do that. But at least you tried for the one. You'll never regret your life if you've tried as hard as you possibly can. Thing is, the universe loves it when you go after your highest potential. Everything aligns behind you. Everything opens up. All this serendipity, all of a sudden you'll meet this person here and that person. Everything just lines up perfectly, and it's all in sync. And all of a sudden what you thought might have been impossible becomes very doable. My son right now is finishing up in a couple months at College for Creative Studies in Detroit, which is one of the best art schools in the country in photography. And he found a guy through a friend who's his mentor, who's a Pulitzer Prize-winning author who was working for the London or the Economist or something like that. Now he's at the Detroit Free Press. And he's taken a liking to my son and taken him under his wing. And my son wants to be like a correspondent that goes into like war zones and explores. He's an urban explorer, you know what I mean? Dives in old buildings and things. He's already doing urban exploring into these closed down schools in Detroit. And there's millions of dollars worth of school supplies and computers with Pentium 4s, he said, locked in. He photographed it all and documented it, told this guy who's a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist, and now he wants to participate in my son's story. Because they say they have no money to give school supplies to kids, and yet there's millions of dollars of supplies literally locked into abandoned schools. They literally boarded them up, locked the supplies into the schools. He found those he breaks into places and explores. If anybody knows what I'm talking about. Urban exploring, anybody heard that before?
Yep.
Well, that's what he's doing. So I was kind of proud of him for doing that because, you know, and he may not make a lot of money doing that, but, you know, I encourage him to explore his potential, really do what he really likes to do, and kind of like just, you know, think about that. He's a, and you'll notice that has nothing to do with what I do for a living, okay? My other, you know, daughter's going to be an artist, and, you know, they all have their own things. I encourage them to do what's best for them. So if you ask me, I would say, what is your highest purpose? What resources do you require to manifest that highest purpose in your life? Go after those resources, and in my opinion, the universe will be right behind you, and I'll make it happen for you. I don't think you were put here to lose. That's a harder question. That's a harder answer you may have wanted there, Roger, but, you know, you have to find, you have to define, it doesn't matter how old you are, if you never clearly define what you're supposed to be doing here, you may take solace in the fact that Rodney Dangerfield didn't even become a name until he was over 60. There's always hope, right?
Yeah, I believe that. I mean, that's why I stick this thing out.
A lot of people, and it's not this job. You guys might not belong here. Maybe you should quit. Serious. About any particular job. You should be willing to walk from any job at any time. Very simply put, find your highest purpose, the highest purpose you can imagine. Figure out exactly how you're going to get from here to there. What resources are you going to need to get there? And the resources will come to you. You will, a comfort zone will be a foreign concept you'll never know it existed. Comfort zones are for people with no goals in life. Comfort zone is a prison cell. It's like being in jail. They're locked up in a prison of their own making. They're trapped there because not seeking their highest purpose in life. They're willing to get by the bare minimum because they have no dreams and no goals anyway, so what's the point? They're nihilistic and fatalistic. And they really don't believe in the future because they don't see a future. They're just existing. They're just timing out. They're waiting for life to time them out. And that's the greatest loss of all. And so if you want to guess what my highest purpose is, take a guess. I'm open for additional questions.
Paul, I think you have really put your finger on what's unique about the kind of work that we do, because it challenges us to really think about our purpose, what meaning in life we're going to apply. And then it gives us the opportunity to fulfill it in a way that very few other career opportunities do. Sales puts us into that, forces us into that position of introspection to really examine why are we doing what we do. And if we don't do that, we're not going to be able to sustain motivation and achieve any measure of success.
I appreciate that. I don't have any, you know, high regard for sales over anything else, by the way. Sales is a job. Like any other job. There's teachers and, you know, there's firefighters and there's accountants and, you know, all kinds of jobs. I mean, I don't think sales is any better than anything else. It has, it's an entrepreneurial, typically an entrepreneurial type of a situation, like a business owner. So it's more like, you know, owning your own business or being entrepreneurial, taking risks and getting rewards. But typically it can give you a potential to make a lot higher earnings than most, especially given the educational level requirements aren't necessarily high. Most jobs of sales don't require any particular educational level. They require, you know, you be able to handle the work and be successful at it. It just gives you an opportunity to, you know, make a lot of money. And also gives you an opportunity to wreck your life and buy, you know, buy coke and crap you don't need and get all hung up about money. It's a very risky profession. It's like gambling. You know, you can go to start gambling. You make fast money, then the next thing you know, you're gambling it away again. If you don't have a place for that money to go, that money's going to dissipate. You're just going to squander it. You can end up in debt because you'll spend it. Once you get the momentum going out, the momentum will keep going. You'll end up spending more than you make. You can buy stuff that's bad for you, like drugs. Go gambling. You know, you can get all ego about it. You can get a fast car and then kill yourself with your Ferrari, which a lot of people do. Just because you can afford a Ferrari doesn't mean you know how to drive. I see a lot of idiots with motorcycles and cars. They have no clue on how to drive them. They have the money to buy them, though. You know, and it doesn't necessarily lead to good things. Without a plan in mind, this is actually a very dangerous career. Seriously, it's very dangerous. And the same applies to business owners. They can get obsessed with their business, spend their whole life on the business, and at the end, what do they got? Nothing. I mean, what was the business for? What were you trying to accomplish here? if you're trying to innovate to make life better for other people and you have a place for your money to go, like your family, it should be yourself and your family first. And then when you get that surplus, you should put it to good use. Reinvest it in your business, create further wealth for other people. I don't know. And then there's all kinds of opportunities to do philanthropic work, fund, you know, put money out there and put it to good use. And my personal opinion is if the more money you have, the more responsibility you were given. I think if karma exists, the more power you have over other people, the harsher karma is for you because you're affecting a lot of other people. If it's just you and you screw up, that's wonderful. But if you're, you know, George Bush and you screw up, you're affecting billions of people. And if your intentions weren't pure, you're incurring a huge karmic debt, in my opinion. Okay? And if you have a lot of money and you're not doing any of that money, in my humble opinion, you're screwed karmically because you were given all this resource and didn't help anybody with it. It's one thing if you're broke and you didn't help anybody else, but if you were given all that money and you didn't put it to good use, one can imagine the reception you're going to get when you die, put it that way. You can look at the envision that happening any which way you want. But again, in my opinion, with that power or knowledge, ability, wealth, anything that's an asset, becomes, you know, a greater responsibility. And so that automatically segues right back to this again. Since you understand that, then it's real simple. There's tons of things that you probably are interested in that you can see yourself funding or investing in. That will sustain you. Then you can have the best of all worlds. You're going to be personally wealthy. Everybody around you is going to enjoy wealth. And a lot of other people are going to benefit by your success. And you're going to get a lot personal more enjoyment because your higher level needs will be met, your social and self-actualization needs, not just ego gratification needs. It'll actually be more enjoyable for you to do it that way. Or perhaps maybe you should just work 20 hours and then go to a beach and hang out. Any other comments?
Paul, this is Catherine. I'd like to make a comment. You know, in thinking about the comfort zone, I think that the tools that you're providing, at least for me personally, allows me to sort of redefine where I'm going and have the tools to do things in a little bit or a lot different manner than I've been used to in the past. Because it's hard to step out of my comfort zone and say, I'm going to do this, even though something else may have worked for me more effectively in the past. So I appreciate that.
Well, Glenn, I'm glad you gained that insight. Or reinforce the insight you probably already had anyway.
Yeah, Paul, this is Steve. I find it interesting, last week your talk was about, how if, you know, let's picture chopping off a toe. And
it's commitment.
What's that?
Commitment.
Right. I think there's a direct correlation to moving out of one's comfort zone. And in last week you had one extreme. This week you have something that's, you know, a little more esoteric, so to speak. And so, you know, if you just simplify it, either pain or fear will move you out of your comfort zone, or a greater, grander picture of what where you want to go or what you think you could be could move you out of your comfort zone. Am I correct?
Absolutely. And that relates to, like, the Maslow hierarchy of needs and baser needs, right? At first, you're under some duress because you're a deficiency. You're in a deficiency situation. You don't have enough air, water, food, shelter, whatever. But once you're not deficient, now you're trying to add on things you don't have to have but are nice, social, artistic, aesthetic. And then, you know, the innermost self-actualization where you start looking back, well, now that I have my house and now I'm eating now and I'm looking at nature and I have a painting on the wall, I feel empty inside. I want to, like, what does my life add up to? You know, some people might say, well, you breed, you know, you have kids and there you go, you're good to go. Well, you know, all right. I guess you could do that. Like I say, people substitute all kinds of things in there, right? They'll superficially attach to a religion in a vain attempt to say that their life is now complete, whereas really they have no personal insight into that religion. They're just, it's superficial. They go to the services, they read the book, blah, 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 but they don't really have any inner belief or any strong convictions one way or the other. They're just a social outlet. So I'm not trying to, you know, I'm not trying to put down religion. I'm just trying to say that I'm also not going to be bullshitted by people who tell me they're religious, okay? I've seen a lot of them. Anybody could say they're religious. So what? See, they're always something. They'll use religion or they'll use their family and they'll come up with all these excuses on why they're not doing it. And I'm saying, I'm holding that to a higher standard. I'm saying, okay, what about your religion is going to drive you? What is it you're going to do? Or, you know, your other goal? I'm asking you to really dig deep to find that higher purpose within you. You know, and if it's not planted there by some deity, find one anyway. I'm trying to make this a generic conversation across all belief boundaries, kind of make it more universal. It's simple fact, if you have no beliefs and you don't believe in anything, that you're pretty much nihilistic and fatalistic and nothing means anything, then you will not have any strong inner convictions that will carry you out of the comfort zone. It's a mechanical process. Really. Now, if you have a charitable instinct, that could do it. If you don't find anything, then you stay where you are. Let's say you're in a life raft out in the middle of the ocean and you never do find land. You know what you do? You sit there until you die. You just float around. You know what I mean? For a long time. Okay, so is that what, hope that relates to what you were saying there, Steve.
Yep, it does.
I mean, I'm not trying to tell, I could care less what people's higher goals are. It's not my business. I'm just saying that the fact is, that is the kind of internal motivation which will push you past these barriers, will disappear. You won't mind working hard because you have a reason to do so, beyond just being simply coerced into doing it. If you're coerced into doing it because you're hungry, and then as soon as you're not hungry anymore, you'll stop. Look, here's a great example. Imagine the people carving the stones in the quarries for someone else's pyramid. You know what I mean? Here you are, a poor schlepper. You're carving stone and dragging them on logs, and you're lifting them up, and you're stacking these huge stones one on top of another, building like the Mayas did it, the Egyptians did it. A lot of different cultures had these stupid pyramids, right? Easter Island, they had these big heads all over the place, and they were competing against each other, but the people doing the work, what the hell did they get out of it? You know what I mean? Now, sometimes they might have participated in the belief that it was like a religious thing. Fine, they had an internal motivation, but a lot of times they were just like slaves. And how long are they going to sit there and haul those rocks if nobody else forced them to haul the rocks, Steve?
Not very long.
Which is like an old story that says, you have two guys, and they're carrying loads of bricks, and the one guy is just anguished. His face is just sweaty. He's miserable. You know, shoulders are aching, and the next guy's whistling and all smiling and stuff. Well, it's obvious. Yeah, the second guy's nuts, right? No. You ask the first guy, so what are you doing? He said, I'm hauling bricks. You ask the second guy what he's doing. He says, I'm building a cathedral. Okay? One brick at a time. So the one guy was externally motivated, and the second guy was internally motivated. Who's going to stop carrying bricks first? I appreciate your attendance.